From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. I have several legislative updates that should be of interest to the postal community. First, last week the Postal Board of Governors postponed its scheduled closed-door meeting, at which time it was anticipated they would discuss the paused and the ongoing so-called Delivering for America Plan associated facility consolidations, as well as consideration of seeking a Postal Regulatory Commission advisory opinion on the matter. The Board of Governors meeting is now scheduled for early July. Second, there have been numerous bills introduced in both the House and Senate seeking to force Postal Service reconsideration of the so-called Delivering for America plan, considering its current negative impact on postal performance. On a related note, the Wall Street Journal published a recent article which focused on the DFA's implementation woes. And finally, just last week, the House Appropriations Committee filed its committee report that accompanies the fiscal year 2025 Financial Services and General Government Appropriations Bill. In that report, the committee expressed deep concern regarding postal consolidations and strongly urged the Postal Service to halt any consolidation or realignment within districts that fail to meet 93% on-time performance for two-day mail and a 90.3% on-time performance for 3 to 5 day mail. Furthermore, the report directs the Postal Service within 180 days to issue an analysis of the impact of the Delivering for America plan on mail delivery times and standards across the country. The committee also directed the United States Postal Service Office of Inspector General to investigate the problems associated with processing plants and distribution center activities. Finally, the committee also urged the Postal Service to restore the Postal Police Law Enforcement Authority to its pre-2020 levels so the police force would be able to protect postal personnel, property, and the mail, whether inside or outside a postal facility. I know that that's a lot to chew on, but it's important to know what's going on. Now let's turn to this week's Naps Chat guest. Occasionally, I like to introduce Naps Chat listeners to colleagues of mine, particularly those who advocate on behalf of issues consistent with those that Naps is promoting. So I am delighted to welcome my good friend Frank McCarthy, a sometimes collaborator of mine who lobbies Congress on behalf of multiple organizations, including my long-term employer, the National Association of Letter Carriers. Frank is the founder of McCarthy Advanced Consulting and has been recognized as among Washington's top lobbyists by The Hill newspaper, a Washington, D.C.-based publication. Prior to being a full-time lobbyist, Frank was a Republican political fundraiser and worked on Capitol Hill for several Republican members of Congress. Welcome to Naps Chat, Frank.
Good to be here, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Now, I want to start with this. Although you have a Republican pedigree in your past, you represent clients who seek your counsel with Democrats, Republicans, as well as independents. So we're talking about a multi-partisan approach to lobbying. Let me ask you this, because I have my own philosophy about this, but is there any difference in dialects you might speak to a Republican, a Democrat, or an independent member of Congress?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And I'll just go back to, you know, my pedigree being that, you know, I always worked for members of Congress who, Republican members of Congress, doing coalition building, you know. So I started on the Hill working for Bud Schuster, who was then the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee chairman. My job was to make sure both the Chamber of Commerce and the AFL-CIO were on board with what we were trying to do. Don Young took over the committee. I continued in that. My hometown congresswoman, a lady named Sue Kelly, I went to work for her. And I basically had the same role there. My job was to make sure that we were you know, reaching as broad a group of supporters on whatever our priorities were that we could. And so I always had to have relationships with Democrats. We never introduced a piece of legislation that didn't have a Democratic co-sponsor. So it's... And that's just the way things are on Capitol Hill. You want to get something done. There are times when one party controls everything and you can try to get everything done in that fashion. But usually you want to build, a broader coalition on that. So in terms of actually speaking to members of Congress, per your question, there's no... It's no secret. Democrats tend to represent more urban areas. There's not many members of the Republican delegation that represent urban areas. So you have to be able to speak to how this is going to impact their communities and their constituents. And those are obviously going to be different. They're going to be impacted in different ways. When you're talking about the, postal service, obviously... FedEx and UPS, they're not servicing a lot of these parts of rural America that are represented by Republican members of Congress. Their lifeline, whether it's package delivery or letter delivery, is going to come from the Postal Service, and they're going to have a relationship with their letter carrier, with their with the post office. So it's just a different way to connect to a different audience. Yeah,
let me touch upon that. You work for Don Young, representing Alaska, which is very, very much a postal-reliant state. Also, you've had leaders in the Republican Party, postal leaders, Ben Gilman from New York and John McHugh, both who represented either ex-urban or rural districts. Susan Collins currently represents a rural state of Maine. Their approach to the Postal Service is out of necessity to their constituents, more so out of any type of relationship with any, let's say, union, per se.
Right on.
It's a constituent service. Do you detect now, even now, you're off the hill for a number of years, that same level of attention to constituent service, that postal service, being a constituent service agency, is there?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, I think there's a recognition even from the most conservative members that any sort of downgrade in postal service is going to detrimentally impact their constituency. And more importantly, if, the Postal Service goes away or if it reduces operations significantly, there is no alternative. Nobody else is going – without receiving some sort of federal subsidy, there is no private enterprise that is going to fulfill that role.
Yeah, I have to reiterate that point or underscore that point, because first time I've ever gotten a call from out of the blue from a congressman from Georgia, rural Georgia, I'll say he's Andrew Clyde. On postal issues, because he's very upset with the Postal Service and how it's affecting his constituents. So Cynthia Loomis, the senator from Wyoming, has become very outspoken on the importance of the Postal Service. That's just an interesting dynamic that has recently come to fruition. It's like the next generation is now coming to the recognition that the Postal Service is not only essential to their constituents, but is also very important to the country as a whole.
No, I would agree with that 100%. And back to your question about how do you speak to Democrats and Republicans, and do you speak to them differently? Ultimately, it's the same goal, right, in having a thriving, successful postal service, but it's how it's impacting their constituents, which is going to be a little different. In an urban area, you're more likely to have a post office that you can walk to or get to pretty easily. That's not the case in rural America. So it's a different emphasis, but it is the same goal. You're not manipulating what you're saying, you're not changing what you're trying to achieve, but you are tailoring it to a different audience.
Now, you've participated when you in the past represented the National Association of Air Traffic Controllers, NATCA. You participated in the Federal Postal Coalition, so that's how I think we've become more attuned to one another and interacted with one another, notwithstanding your previous experience with Senator Congressman Young and Chairman Schuster. But I want to ask you about when you were growing up in a place called Wappinger Falls, New York. It's almost the name of the community. Sounds like it comes out of It's a Wonderful Life, right, the Jimmy Stewart movie. How was it like growing up in Wappinger Falls? And did you have a relationship with the postal, with your local post office at that point?
I did, actually. You know, it's funny because when I was in grade school, we had this beautiful post office that was in a place called the Imperial Plaza. And we had a movie theater and all those things. And as you can imagine, you know, in the 80s, standalone movie theaters were a thing. And now, you know, then they all moved to the malls. So as they moved that post office, again, beautiful building, into a new facility. And that was a, you know, big, beautiful facility, but it was very government-like, right? It was just very rectangle box with a lot of parking spaces for the postal trucks. And I remember our neighbor, we had two different neighbors that worked for the Postal Service. One was a letter carrier named Gil. Him and his family had moved up from Yonkers, and he would commute down to Yonkers to continue his route until he finally was able to get transferred to the Wappinger Falls facility. And I remember his sons being so happy because their dad wouldn't have to leave an hour early. But yeah, you know, the Postal Service has always been a part of, you know, our life. I remember our letter carrier that used to come to our house every single day. And, you know, my mom would sit outside on hot days, and when he would come by, they would stop and chat. And, you know, that's my experience. I don't think is much different than many people's. You know, we were suburban America. Letter carrier comes around. Everybody knows who they are. They know their name. And I'm happy that, you know, in the community I live in Alexandria, Virginia, it's very much the same way.
Let me ask you something about your approach to lobbying. As you know, I represent a sole entity, the National Association of Postal Supervisors. You represent multiple clients. Can you tell me about how you balance the interests of different clients as you go up to the Hill? How do you represent yourself? How do you make sure that there are no conflicts that may come about in your representation of these different organizations?
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned before, I was in-house with the National Air Traffic Controllers for 6 years. And there we were very hyper-focused, right? On the Hill, as a congressional staffer, you don't handle one issue, you handle dozens of issues. So I had transportation, I had defense, we had environment, I had energy, as well as labor issues, small business issues. And then, you know, I go to the air traffic controllers, it's not just transportation, it's not just aviation. It is hyper-focused on air traffic control. Multi-clients is very much like being that Hill staffer that is trying to balance a lot of things all at once. All of my clients have staff that concentrate on a day-to-day basis on what is happening in their world, whether it's with their membership or it is what is happening in the regulatory arena that is going to impact them, or what is happening on Capitol Hill that is going to impact them. And I come in as a supplement, right? I am not their government affairs operation. I am part of their government affairs operation. And a lot of the times it is, you know, a targeted list of people. Let's see if we can get these guys on board an initiative or oppose an initiative, depending on what the case may be. You know, my business is, you know, almost exclusively labor unions, not entirely, but mostly labor union. And even my non-labor clients, I call them labor adjacent because they are employers exclusively of labor unions or labor union membership. So it's pretty unique in that sense. But, you know, with each and every one of them, their issues are different. They might fall under a big labor umbrella, but all of them have very specific issues that we have to talk about. So I am not, you know, an expert on any and all of their issues. I know enough to make the points that I need to make. And when a deep dive is necessary on a policy issue, usually my client is there to help me with any of the in the weeds topics. But yeah, it's definitely different because when I was with NATCA, you know, we were very much, you know, following everything day to day, building those relationships on behalf of NATCA, on behalf of the constituents that we represented, the membership that we represented. And with multi-clients, my job is to make sure that I'm developing or building those relationships on behalf of the client, right? It is not MAC, that's the name of my firm. It's not MAC relationships that I'm trying to build. I'm trying to build them on behalf of my individual clients.
What I want to touch upon is that you indicated that you complement whatever legislative or government relations activity is existing within the client's space. You're not replacing that. You're supplementing or complementing that
effort. Yeah, yeah. And I got to be honest with you, that was something that I had a tough time dealing with when I started at NATC. And I'm like, who are these outside consultants? Why are they necessary? I do this all day, every day. But then quickly was able to, you know, just my experience working with them, seeing like they're not trying to do what I do. They're trying to help supplement what we are maybe either unable to or just don't have the time and resources to do. And that is largely what I try to provide for my clients. And some it's more than others. Some of them I'm doing aspects of public relations in addition to the government affairs. Some of my clients hire me for different things. Some of them want me to talk to Republicans and Democrats, House and Senate. Some hire me exclusively to talk to House Republicans, for instance. Some just very specific committees. But the idea is that, you know, I have relationships that I can help transfer over to the their organization, to their membership.
You had mentioned that on the Hill you dealt with a whole slew of issues. What drew you to labor unions, since you currently represent primarily labor unions, and you went to NATCA right after?
Sure, sure. So my dad was a janitor. I think we've talked about this before. He was a janitor in the Bronx at a high school, DeWitt Clinton High School. And
right across the athletic field from where I went to high school.
Right, right. Bronx Science.
Bronx,
right?
Science, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So he would commute down every day, and he was kind of like the token Democrat that would run in these Dutchess County elections that was at the time very Republican. It's probably still pretty Republican, but you know, demographically, it's changed significantly since I was a kid. And you know, that blue collar roots was always part of me. I became a Republican, and I when I came to Capitol Hill, you know, I worked for Republicans, but you know, my heart has always been in, you know, blue collar workers and making sure that they, you know, have a level playing field, that they have a fair shot, and that the party and government in general aren't running roughshod over them. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, something that I did for the committees when I worked for them. When I worked for Sue Kelly, I did the same thing. When, you know, I was kind of forced off the Hill, my boss had lost her reelection in 2006. You know, I had a lot of opportunities to do a lot of different things, but the one that I think captivated me the most was the idea of working for a labor union and helping them build relationships with the Republican Party at a time when the Republicans had kind of been, you know, thrown out of town. Mm-hmm. And 2 years later, more of them got thrown out of town when Obama came to office. But we were there, we were talking to them, building those relationships at a time when they were in the deep, deep minority. And it all paid off, Bob, because in 2010, the House flips, as you remember, and there is a chairman that we weren't, NACA traditionally just hadn't been too close with, but I had spent the previous 4 years just building a relationship with this individual and with the members of his committee. And so when he introduced their FAA reauthorization draft bill, our collective bargaining rights that NACA had been fighting for the past 6 years, including my time on the Hill, they, you know, they put our collective bargaining language in the base bill of their bill. And then a lot of unions came to me and said, how are you guys doing this? We're getting our butts kicked and they're trying to gut us and you guys are playing offense. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, it's amazing what happens when you actually talk to people, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to talk with you about coalition building.
Sure.
That was your function on the Hill. You participated as the legislative person for NATCA is part of the Federal Postal Coalition, and now you still continue looking at building coalitions. Can you talk to me about the importance of coalitions?
Yeah, absolutely, because you want a coalition that is broad, right? So, for instance, we're working on a bill right now that somewhat high profile, and for a couple of our clients, it's a big deal. It is cannabis banking. Right now, it's all cash business. Now, however you feel about cannabis, marijuana legalization, that's irrelevant. For my clients, it's about safety, right? The fact that, you know, you're picking up duffel bags of $100,000 to get paid for the job that you did, whether it's duct work or electrical or whatever the case may be, you know, makes you a target. And our folks have been targeted. So, you know, for a long time, these issues have been things where just the traditional it's like the pot smoker types, you know, the traditional marijuana advocates have been making the case for this. But now you can bring in businesses and bankers and build that broader coalition. You actually start getting momentum because people look at it as not just this issue for this fringe group of individuals, but rather for, you know, everyday Americans, business owners, small business owners, people who are just trying to live and do their jobs, and they're put in harm's way as a result of bad policy. And I use that as an example to show whenever you're trying to make a case, and sometimes it could be so personal that you and your organization think that you're the only ones that can really speak to this issue. And it doesn't mean you should stop speaking to this issue, Bob, but bring more people on board so a different perspective could come across. As we started the conversation, we talked about the difference between Republicans and Democrats and the constituencies that they represent. So you want to have a coalition that can talk to every segment of Congress, right? Whether you're in rural America, urban America, your coalition is represented there. You're going to broaden out the your appeal to a broader swath of members of Congress, which is going to be necessary if you want to get something across the finish line.
Now, for you, the clients, when you put together these coalitions, the assumption is that members of the coalition actually vote and will be actively engaged in the political process. Otherwise, the whole concept of coalition building is not consequential to a member of Congress or a United States senator. Are you at all involved in the creating the energy that will cultivate this enthusiasm behind a legislative effort?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there's messaging that goes along with that. But most importantly, what I find, and again, I represent labor unions, so maybe this is unique to what I do, but the power of labor is its membership, right? So it is very important for our membership to get engaged. And I would imagine with NAPS, it'd be the same thing, right? You have a broad membership probably in every single congressional district in America. So I always encourage our clients, get your membership out there and building relationships with their members of Congress, right? Whether you're doing a site visit, a tour, or just meeting them in their district office, people that are willing to go and meet their members of Congress, talk to them, are easily viewed by members of Congress as voters, right? Potentially the voters for them, but voters nonetheless, and you're going to be listened to. Somebody who is going to invite you and give you a tour of their facility, introduce you to their friends and colleagues at the workplace, are not people that are going to skip the ballot box on election day, right? So they're going to be paid attention to. So those relationships really, really matter. And that's what we try to do here, is try to make sure that those relationships aren't just relationships in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. but relationships that translate back home, right? It's actually more important for me. I might start the relationship, I may build the relationship, but when there is an important vote that is going to come up that is going to impact one of my clients, I actually love it when they call that constituent that I help them build the relationship with. That's the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And if they're doing that, they're convinced that those people that they're calling, those constituents, are in fact voters, right?
And that is, you would counsel your client to really get out there and to work with their membership, so they realize what the stakes are.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, most of these organizations will have some sort of legislative rep in every single congressional district. And, you know, they're leaders, and they usually represent dozens, if not hundreds, of other colleagues, other members of their organization. So they are the voice for that voice to the member of Congress that they're building the relationship with. And with that, you know, comes some significance, some influence. And it's vital, in my view, to have that relationship. Very few members of Congress are going to vote a certain way because Frank McCarthy tells them to vote that way. I am suggesting that they do this, build this relationship, and then they could see with their own eyes what the value is.
Are you still involved in electoral politics?
No. You know, I worked in some campaigns a long time ago, but for the most part, you know, I try to stay relatively apolitical. I attend events on behalf of my clients, but I don't work on behalf of any elected officials.
Okay. So let's take your current capacity, sort of an agnostic, a political agnostic, as we go right now. What's at stake in the 2024 election from your perspective, representing your clients?
Well, that's a loaded question, Bob. But, you know, I think all elections are important, and 2024 is certainly no different in that respect. I'm not trying to, you know, understate the significance of the 2024 election, but it is pretty significant. I don't think I can say anything that would, you know, I don't know if we've had an election in my lifetime where the two candidates haven't been more well-defined in the public's perspective, right? They know who Donald Trump is, who he was as president, and they know Joe Biden, who he was as vice president and how his administration has been. You know, so it's pretty significant, and I would imagine that it's going to have an impact on every federal agency, the way that they run, who they you know employ, and what their mission is going to be for the American people. So I would say it's pretty monumental.
With that final note, I want to thank Frank McCarthy, the president and chief executive officer of McCarthy Advanced Consulting, MAC, for joining me on Naps Chat this week. Thanks, Frank.
Thanks, Bob. This was great.
And thank you to my listeners. If you enjoy Naps Chat, please leave a positive review on your chosen podcast platform. And more importantly, tell your friends to download our podcast and listen in. In the meantime, be well and be safe.